From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Four of my nine predecessors as governor went to jail. Mr. Pritzker has a very good chance of being number five. The people of Illinois.
That's ridiculous.
The people
Hold on.
Of
let,
Illinois
let him finish.
Deserve
Go ahead.
Better than this.
Please, no applause. Go ahead, Governor, finish your thoughts.
This person does not deserve to hold the highest office in the state of Illinois or any elected office. And to add insult to injury, he was caught using the language of racist, referring to elected officials in Illinois, calling black elected officials. What did he call him?
I'll leave that to you.
Offensive.
All right. Your time is up here, Governor. There's a lot
here.
May
I respond?
Yeah, there's a lot
here.
Go ahead. Feel free to respond. You have 1 minute.
If I may, this is, first of all, you've just heard a desperate rant by a failed governor who is in the final hours of his campaign and his governorship.
Folks, please, let's hold the applause. If we could hold the applause.
Be clear, you're likely to hear more of that tonight because he's got nothing else, just lies and excuses.
Well, the TV debates for governor and the candidates there are through, the last one taking place in Quincy this week. We look back at what has happened in these debates and through the campaign and if voters are any better informed. Also, congressional races are heating up in Illinois, possibility of some big turnover in the Illinois congressional delegation. That and more ahead on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. In our State House studio, we have Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio State House Editor. And joining us from Chicago today, Greg Hines with Crane Chicago Business. And Greg, it's good to have you on once again.
Always a pleasure.
Brian, I'll start with you. I mentioned we're done with these TV debates between Governor Rauner and J.B. Pritzker. The question is, have we learned anything from these debates?
I think we've learned that Governor Rauner really doesn't like J.B. Pritzker, and J.B. Pritzker doesn't have much nice to say about Governor Rauner either. In terms of, have we learned much about, you know, what actual policies they would pursue? Less so. These debates have been pretty nasty. There has been a lot of, as we heard, name-calling and accusations of criminality from both people. But, you know, this particularly this last debate was just the setting of it was a bit of a coup for the Pritzker campaign. They came out very early this year back in May and, you know, said, here's the three debates we're going to do and no take backs. And then they just basically haven't agreed to anything else. And the only downstate debate, two were in Chicago, and this was the third and final one. The only one that was downstate happened to be in Quincy, which is by far not the largest media market, not the most important city downstate, not the most populous area. But it is the site of Governor Rauner's ongoing, you know, it's a reminder of Governor Rauner's ongoing difficulties in how he initially dealt with a Legionnaires crisis at the Illinois Veterans Home in Quincy. And it's something that the Pritzker campaign has been pounding, you know, as saying that this, you know, points to the governor's overall incompetence from Pritzker's perspective.
And Greg, what did you take away from this latest debate?
What I took away is, frankly, I need to take a shower afterwards, even though I wasn't there. It's really awful when a gubernatorial debate comes down to who's the bigger crook. But that's kind of where this one went. It's been going there for a while, and once it got in the ditch, it didn't get out. Brian is right. There's so much more we could have learned here that voters have a right to know. I mean, for Mr. Rauner, the real question is, if you're reelected, is Act Two going to be any better than Act One? Give us some reason to think that you'll get along better with Madigan or accomplish more than you did the first term. For Mr. Pritzker, the clear question is, okay, you want to pass this graduate income tax, but who's going to pay it and who's not going to pay it? Where's the money going to come from? None of that stuff got answered. Instead, it's your toilet thing shows that you're a crook and ought to be in jail. Oh, no, your handling of Quincy shows that you ought to be in jail. It's really sad.
And, Charlie, this is really what debates, it seems like, have come to in recent years. We don't seem to get to that information that we all claim we want from these. Maybe that's truly not what voters really do want. They want these guys to go at each other. Maybe it makes for better theater. But in the end, you know, from what you've seen, you admitted you did not watch this debate in Quincy. But part of that's probably because you weren't too impressed with what you saw in the earlier ones.
No, I wasn't. And as a matter of fact, I had a lot of stuff to do to get ready for class this afternoon. I thought to myself, do I want to spend an hour watching these two guys sling mud at one another and see who comes off as being the most, to use a movie term, despicable character? Or should I get ready for class tomorrow? And I chose to get ready for class tomorrow. As a matter of fact, after the last one, Eric Zorn, a columnist with the Tribune, suggested maybe we shouldn't have these kinds of debates. Maybe what we should do is bring a candidate in, sit him down, and have reporters just question that candidate without the other guy there. And part of it is, if you're the moderator, you don't want to be rude when they go at each other, but you're tempted. If I were the moderator, I'd say something like, Mr. Pritzker, shut up for a minute. Answer the question. Governor, shut up for a minute. Answer the question.
And it is hard, I think, as a moderator of debates. I've done it before. Others have as well, where you feel like you have to be as fair as possible, and you have to follow these ground rules that are laid out. Greg, you have, I know, been involved in those types of editorial board settings in the past. Those do, at least in my opinion, seem to bring out better answers from the candidates and more information for voters.
I tend to agree with you. I mean, with all respect to my friends at the Sun-Times and the Tribune, who now do joints, as we all know, politicians like to duck and bob and weave. They don't like to answer questions. And they'll take something you've asked them to use and parrot that, turn it off to the side and turn it into an attack on the other guy. If you have a chance to really hammer somebody and really just ask the follow-up questions, you'll usually get a little bit closer, whereas if it's the two of them debating, the way it tends to be now, it's just you're going to score your points without really answering the question.
Brian, your thoughts on debates in general? I mean, have they become very valuable or valuable at all here in this day and age that we're in?
No, it really depends on how the candidates approach them. I think you can have a substantive debate. I saw a couple during the primary that were interesting because they were focused on specific issues. They were run by interest groups. The questions came from members of those interest groups. But, you know, candidates nowadays, particularly, I think, inexperienced candidates, people who have not come up through the political process, you know, the traditional route of running for school board or park board and then the state legislature and then maybe a lower executive office and then you run for governor. If you're just one of these people who comes off the street and, you know, has a lot of money, jump right in. You want to get right into the top office. You go to this media training and they teach you how to be robotic about your talking points and how to, you know, pivot from the question that's asked to the answer you would rather give that's more in your wheelhouse. And nowadays, it's really, really challenging to knock candidates off their talking points. So even, you know, even in an interview setting, and you can be rude, and a well-disciplined candidate can just resist that. I almost think we all need some sort of media counterinsurgency training to counter the training that the politicians have been getting, because they are just really difficult nuts to crack nowadays.
And Brian, last night I think Pritzker again, even though he was put on the spot to say, hey, what are some ideas on this idea of a graduated income tax? What are your ideas for rates for that? He refused to give any real specifics. And then Rauner had some faux pas, it seemed, as well. We heard one at the start of the show, that pause. There was sort of like somebody trying to tell a joke and blowing the punchline is what it felt like to me when I was listening to it. Like, it just fell flat, the point he was trying to make. So did either one of these guys come out a winner in this Thursday night debate?
You know, with respect to my mm-hmm. boss, I kind of hate that question. Mm-hmm. We'll know in November which one of them came out a winner. I hate to get into this sort of theater criticism, but, you know, obviously people are watching on TV. This may be the only way they really have any extended exposure to the campaign. And so it is important. But Governor Rauner looked, frankly, tired. One of the reporters in the post-debate Q&A even asked him, he said, you look, quote, bedraggled. And he said, you know, I'm just working 24 hours a day, campaigning, you know, really, really working hard to go through this campaign. So from that standpoint, I don't know who comes out looking good. I wonder how many people even are paying that much attention. We're so polarized that if you're engaged in politics, if you think about it, you've probably made up your mind already. Yeah, I'm sorry, Greg's trying to get in there. Go ahead.
I'll take a crack at that. I mean, if you believe the polls, and the polls have been very consistent now for quite a while, that Mr. Pritzker has a double-digit lead on Governor Rauner. This was the governor's last real opportunity on the big stage to try to turn things around. To the extent that he didn't, and it turned into a mud bath in which everybody got dirty, Pritzker's probably the winner because Rauner didn't score.
Charlie, when we look back at campaigns at this point, it's been a long time. I mean, certainly not in my lifetime that I can remember a candidate for governor having this type of lead in the polls like we're seeing right here. Maybe you can correct me on that. But Rauner really, I think Greg's pointing out, he really needed some type of Hail Mary here at the last minute, something to come through for him that could really bring down Pritzker while also trying to bring himself up. It hasn't seemed like he's been able to accomplish that.
No, and I think his problem is he really does need something to bring Pritzker down, because the people have said not only they're not going to vote for him, but they don't like him. And the only cure for that, I think, is to make them dislike the other guy more. And you mentioned Hail Mary. The thing that I suspect may be out there, and I don't know, obviously, there may be something else from those Blagojevich tapes that will be leaked to the Tribune at the last minute that could damage Pritzker. That's got to be Rauner's hope, because I think it's fair to say, if you look at his record, he really hasn't accomplished much. And what he takes credit for doing, some of it, for example, the school funding reform, he vetoed the bill. And then when he was threatened with an override, they came to a compromise, which he ultimately signed. All the criminal justice stuff, that was largely the work of people like Kwame Raoul and the Democrats in the legislature, with help from some of the Republican colleagues, that sent the bill to him, and then he signed it. But he doesn't have a level of achievement that most governors usually do when they run for reelection.
Well, one thing that might help him, or might have helped him, it hasn't seemed like it has so far, was this information that became public regarding what the governor had been hinting at for quite a few months, and that is information from an inspector general's report talking about these toilets being removed from a Pritzker mansion to save a bunch of money on property taxes. Greg, you wrote a report this week that you may have uncovered, or you at least feel you may have uncovered, the mystery of how this report became public.
Yeah, I normally don't pry around to find other reporters' sources. We all have confidential sources. We all write our stuff. But this one really caught my eye because this was the potential Hail Mary, to go back to what you said a minute ago. It happened late in the day, and it was a report that in theory only went to a bunch of Cook County Democratic officials. And you would have to wonder, well, if only people like Joe Berrios and Tony Preckwinkle got the report, well, then who leaked this to somebody to give this big advantage to Governor Rauner? So I called around a little bit and talked to some sources that I trust, and the person that people ended up pointing at is a guy named Peter Kahalios, who is the general counsel for Maria Pappas, the Cook County treasurer. She's one of the people who got the report because it's her office that wrote the refund checks after Pritzker filed for the tax break because of the toilets. And Peter says he didn't leak it. Maria Pappas says he didn't leak it. But other people who are closest say he did, and they point to things like the fact that he has a whole bunch of personal and financial connections to the governor. There's a wonderful tape of the governor speaking to the Hellenic voters a few months ago, where he gets up and he gives, you know, he's getting their Man of the Year award from their board. Well, one of the board members there is Peter Kahalios, and the governor talks about how this guy's his great personal friend and is a wonderful public official. This is somebody who works for somebody who's the Cook County treasurer, a big Democrat. So that's all really suggestive. Is it definitely prove it? No, but I hear this is the guy.
And even if it was leaked, it hasn't seemed to have that impact, has it, that that Rounders campaign had hoped for, at least according to what we're hearing?
Well, it didn't, because the Democrats immediately managed to muddy it up. I mean, around the time this is coming out, Lisa Madigan, who's the outgoing Democratic Attorney General, says that she's going to all of a sudden open a criminal probe into the Quincy matter that's been pending for, what, how many months have we been talking about Quincy? So that dirtied it up. That set the stage for, I may be a crook, but you're a crook too. So it all gets lost to civilian voters in the fray.
A lot of politics on both sides going on. Well, let's turn our attention, because we have a couple of weeks left to talk about the governor's race and other campaigns, but let's spend some time this week on the congressional races. And Brian, from an overview of the state, Republicans do okay in Illinois for what we consider to be a blue state when it comes to the congressional delegation. But there's some risk there, certainly, for Republicans. They're feeling some pressure right now, just a couple of weeks out.
Yeah, I mean, there are really a number of seats in Illinois that are central to this Democratic effort to retake the U.S. House of Representatives in Washington. Starting downstate here in central Illinois in Springfield, the district that stretches over all the way to Champaign, up to Bloomington, Decatur, as well as almost over to the St. Louis area on the Illinois side, is the 13th Congressional District. Incumbent Congressman Rodney Davis is running. He has won handily every time except his first election back in 2012, which he narrowly won. Just 0.3 of a percentage point was his victory. And that district was drawn to be competitive for Democrats, and they are putting a lot of attention in it, so much so that on Friday afternoon, as we are taping, Vice President Mike Pence is said to be on his way here to host a fundraiser, to keynote a fundraiser for Davis. You also have Congressman Mike Bost, who is in the southern part of the state, in a district that stretches from Metro East, again, the Illinois side of St. Louis, all the way down to the Carbondale area. And he has been in since 2014. That district was previously held by a Democrat, and Democrats are hoping to take that one back, too. Plus, there are a couple of races up in the suburbs that are getting a lot of attention, national attention this year.
And, Greg, why don't you fill us in on those, the ones that are really tight up there?
The tightest of them appears to be Peter Roskam's district. He's a member of the Ways and Means Committee. He was one of the prime authors of the tax bill that the president lauded and signed into law. He's in considerable trouble, as being opposed by a Democratic clean energy executive named Sean Casten. In somewhat better shape is Randy Holkman, who's next door in the old Denny Hastert district, the 14th district. He's also being challenged. Most of the political observers I've talked to say that Holkman is probably going to survive, although the Cook Political Report this Friday when we're taping moved that district into a toss-up. Roskam may be in some considerable trouble. The Democrats have poured a lot of money into there. The sense on both sides of the aisle is that one is now leaning the other way. If he goes, and if Mr. Holkman goes, that remarkably would mean that this entire metropolitan area, the third largest metropolitan area in the country, would only have one Republican congressman surviving. That would be Adam Kinzinger from Shanahan. This is the district that that gave the Republican House the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Henry Hyde, a Speaker of the House, and Denny Hastert. Things have really gotten polarized, and as downstate becomes redder, upstate is becoming bluer. And that's what I think this reflects.
And Charlie, your thoughts on what you're seeing with these congressional races?
Well, I think the expectation is that in the midterms after a presidential election, the president's party always loses seats. But as was said earlier, this is probably as polarized as we've seen in a number of years. You'd have to go back probably to 2010 and the Tea Party movement to get the same sense of upheaval, if you will. And you look at the map, it was drawn by Democrats. The expectation is that Democrats would have a majority. But I think at the time they drew the map, as they're creating Democratic districts, almost by definition, that means you have to put a lot of Republicans in the districts that you're not going to compete for. And in districts like Roskam's, was expected to be Republican. Same for Congressman Holkman. So that would be a real surprise if those were to flip.
And Charlie, let me ask you this, because certainly Democrats have some enthusiasm. We know that going into these races. I mean, I think there's a lot of anti-Trump sentiment among Democrats, certainly. The Brett Kavanaugh hearing certainly may have brought more of that out. At the same time, we're sitting here watching Bruce Rauner really struggle in the polling we've seen. I mean, down in some cases, 20 or more points to J.B. Pritzker. Not having somebody doing well at the top of the ticket in the state of Illinois, that's not helping these Republican candidates for Congress either, because turnout could be hurt on their side.
Yeah, and that's going to be the key. Who's got the best ground game on the congressional races? If you can identify and get your voters to the poll, you're going to do okay in a district that's competitive. And if you can't do that, you're going to lose. And there are cases, I used to cover the legislature, legislative elections for the Sun-Times, and there were a couple of cases where somebody lost in a district where they should have won because they didn't work hard enough, they didn't have their ground game going. They kind of figured, hey, this district favors a Democrat or this district favors a Republican. I don't really have to work hard. And they had a challenger who busted, in one case it was a woman, she busted her tail. Another case a guy, he busted his tail, and they knocked out the favorites.
And Brian and Greg, both, you could weigh in on this, but your thoughts on this Rauner effect, is that going to drag down some of these Republican congressional candidates?
I wanted to hearken back to something I read in the Simon poll, which came out a week ago. And this polled at the end of September into the beginning of October, and it was right. The poll was in the field when the second Kavanaugh hearings with Christine Blasey Ford took place. So that, you know, that may have weighed into sort of the second half of the polling period. But anyway, in that poll, Republicans' enthusiasm, like, you know, are you more excited? The question was, are you thinking about the upcoming elections? Are you more enthusiastic than usual about voting or less enthusiastic? And Republicans were 54% were more enthusiastic. That was just a little bit above where they were in 2014.
Is that Democrats or Republicans?
That's Republicans. Okay. 54% enthusiastic. It was actually up from 2014, 4 percentage points. But on the Democratic side, they were at 65% enthusiastic, and that was more than double where they were in 2014. So in Illinois, at least, which I kind of resent that as somebody who covers the legislature in Illinois, the midterm election phrase, it's the term election phrase if you're talking about state government. But, you know, the Republicans the Democrats in 2014, only 31% of Democrats said that they were more enthusiastic about voting in the midterm elections or for Governor Pat Quinn's reelection. Whereas this year, it's 65%. It's more than doubled. So you're really seeing a huge spike in enthusiasm on the Democratic side.
And Greg, go ahead and weigh in if you'd like.
Yeah, I generally agree with that. When you have a guy at the top of the ticket who's not doing well, and people start to conclude, well, why should I bother? Because he's gonna lose anyhow. It hurts your party all up and down the ballot. The one saving grace here for the Republicans is that one of the things they were able to accomplish last time they were in power, after the Gingrich election year, is they wiped out the party ballot. Where you used to be able to punch, you know, I vote, boom, I'll punch this, and I'll vote for every Republican on the ballot or every Democrat on the ballot. You no longer can do that. If that were still there, Republicans would be in incredible trouble. Fortunately for them, it's not.
Well, let me, we've got a couple of minutes here left before we wrap up. And Greg, I want to go back to you because you also wrote this week about what is known as the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, came out with a report. Not a lot of people probably read that report, but you did. And what did you find in it?
What's interesting about the report is it echoes what some other reports recently have started to conclude, that one of the major reasons why the Chicago region is not doing as well as it should be and is lagging peer metropolitan areas in terms of growth and of jobs and population and wealth is that minority folks, particularly African Americans, are not participating nearly as much as they should in that. Compared to other cities, they're not doing well, and that's kind of holding back the whole region. And as CMAP concluded in this report, hey, if we're gonna compete with Los Angeles and Boston and New York and Dallas or wherever, we need to make sure that the prosperity gets spread, because when one group doesn't do well, we all kind of don't do well to some degree. They're a little less specific on what the do about all that? I mean, they talked about prioritized spending, whatever, but it's kind of what was reflected in all the, in last week when the Van Dyke shooting decision came down for Laquan McDonald. There are clearly severe racial and ethnic tensions certainly up in the Chicago area. And what this is saying is that we're paying an economic cost for it, that disparity hurts everybody.
Charlie, you've watched for a long time both the state of Illinois and certainly the Chicago area. Is this something new, or is this just, you know, the way things have always been, at least going back many, many years in the Chicago area?
Well, there's always been a vast disparity among the white ethnic groups and the African-American groups in the city of Chicago. It's been said that Chicago is the most segregated city in the U.S. And when you have that kind of a divide, and when you have a perception in the black community that white police officers cannot be trusted, and when in the white ethnic community you have a suspicion of anybody who's black and a young male, it's very hard to work together. Now, there have been efforts made to try and bridge that gap, but sometimes the funding isn't there as it should be for some of the programs designed to cut down on violence. Our budget impasse did not help because funds that should have been available for work out in the community weren't there. But yeah, this has been an ongoing problem for as long as I've been watching this stuff, and that's darn near 50 years, and I suspect even before then.
Well, let's go now.
Maybe the fact that a respected planning group like this is saying that it's a problem, and that hey, your income is lower than it would be otherwise, maybe that's a sign of progress in and of itself. One can hope so.
Okay, let's go to our notes from the field. Brian, we'll start with you.
Yeah, just there was word out of Washington this week, and this is just a committee. It's very early in the process, but Senator Durbin was trumpeting the fact that a bill that he introduced with Republican Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina was meant to deal with the sort of election interference that affected Illinois first, or at least attempted to affect Illinois first back in 2016. I kind of love the way they name bills in Washington. We don't really see this in Illinois. This is called the Deter Act, which stands for Defending Elections Against Troll from Enemy Regimes.
All right, Greg, let's go to you.
While we've all been focused on this mudbath battle for governor, something interesting may have been happening in another one of the statewide races that's this year. That's the one for attorney general between the Democratic nominee Kwame Raoul, the state senator, and downstate attorney Erica Harrell on the Republican side. I have people on both sides of the aisle telling me that race has tightened considerably. It's now in the single digits. That's consistent with what the Simon poll found a few weeks ago. It may be that Mr. Arul has the same kind of problem that Aurelia Puchinsky did a generation ago during the LaRusha years. His name, like hers, is causing a problem. Whatever, that one may be worth watching, that even despite this big lead that Mr. Pritzker seems to have, that race has become quite close, I'm told.
Okay. And Charlie.
Well, there's a report that came out earlier this week saying that the number of people who are qualified to use medical marijuana has almost doubled from a year ago. It's now more than 46,000 users, and the number is expected to grow even more once we fully implemented the legislation that was recently enacted to allow people to use medical marijuana as a substitute for opioids.
Okay, that will do it for this week. Members of the broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Greg Hines. You can get a podcast of the show at nprillinois.org. Production assistance provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.